There are so many places to travel and so many things to see, and there are reasons for going anywhere at any time. Traveling is more than just a vacation to relax, but an opportunity to create memories for yourself and the people that you are traveling with. In today's episode, we talk about a bunch of different places and destinations where you eat something good and you just really loved that dish, and then other places where you go on to this cruise and it just creates this great atmosphere to spend time with loved ones. So we bounce around a lot and we talk about Australia, Indonesia, Peru, Rome, just to name a few. So a lot packed into this episode that I know any food-loving traveler will enjoy. Let's get started. Welcome, welcome to the Nomadic Foodist Show, a podcast for food-obsessed travelers. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. Today, I have Kelly Stillwell, who is the blogger behind Food, Fun, and Faraway Places. She's had this blog now for over 13 years and has been on some great adventures all around the world, and I love just talking to someone who loves food and travel just as much as I do, and you can just tell we're just having a good time during this interview, just trading food and travel stories, and I love just hearing how much she loves what she does for a living. We talk about a ton of different destinations and lots of different dishes and foods and travel tips and all sorts of stuff, so this one is packed full to the brim, and we're going to have all the information in the show notes that I'll mention later on at the end of the episode, but it's definitely something that I think will reinvigorate any sort of stale life that people might have right now, maybe not traveling and maybe not seeing or doing all the things they want to do. Just listening to Kelly just got me so excited for my trip that's coming here in September when we leave. I'm just really excited to jump back into traveling again. And like I said, if maybe you haven't taken a trip in a while, maybe you've been a little hesitant because there's so many things going on around the world. I think that this talk with Kelly might reignite some passion. Maybe you put travel as a priority again. And I just really enjoyed our talk together. So here is my interview with Kelly Stillwell from Food, Fun, and Faraway Places. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us today. Let's go ahead, start off with an introduction and tell us about yourself.
My name is Kelly Stillwell, and my blog is Food, Fun, and Faraway Places, where I write about my two favorite things, food and travel. And I also write for some freelance publications, print magazines and Travelocity and some other publications.
So you mentioned Travelocity you write for, and then who else? What other fun publications have you contributed to?
I write for Bradenton Magazine, which is a regional print magazine here where I live. That's a lot of fun. I just write about local things to do and restaurants and things like that. I've written for the Daily Meal. I've also been featured in Southern Living Magazine, on the Visit Florida website, on Holland America's website. And I've done a podcast with We Three Travel a couple of years ago. That was fun.
Oh, great. How did you get started with some of these publications and get published like this? That's more of my own personal interest, because I don't know, it'd be kind of cool to get in touch and write a few articles for magazine. How'd you get started with that?
Well, Bradenton Magazine, I was on Facebook one day and Bradenton Magazine was advertising for paid advertisers. And I thought, wow, it would be great to write for a local magazine. And so I just took the information and reached out to them and met with the editor, and she loved the idea. But, it's great. It's only four times a year right now. It's a brand new magazine. It's a beautiful, glossy magazine. And she really lets me write about whatever I want to write about. So it's worked out really well for me. Travelocity was a very long process, a 2-year process, in fact. They used to have a program called the National Nomads with a G. National Nomads. And I spoke to them for 2 solid years before they invited me to be a nomad. And about a year later, the program dissolved. So, but it was a fun year.
Yeah.
It was a really a 2-year process. I would reach out and they would 6 months later come back and say, oh, yes, we're still interested in this. And I'd get excited and wouldn't hear from them again for 3 months. And it was just, but it was fun while it lasted. And I connected with the 11 other nomads and it was a great experience.
Oh, that's great. So it can take some time to be in a more major publication. So that's good. And I haven't really put myself out there. I've just been trying to write more consistently on my own blog and trying to figure out my own writing style before I put myself out there. But it's good to know that you can just kind of reach out and see what happens. The worst they can say is no, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, pick up Writer's Market. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It comes out every year and it's got every year an updated list of publications, magazines you can write for in the travel market. And they just don't pay a lot, honestly. I mean,
no,
that's
I
the biggest problem. I was in Australia like 6 weeks ago, and one of the writers writes for all the big ones, you know, all the really big magazines that I would love to write for. And she said, I'm just making no money. And she said, gotcha. I need to do what you're doing. I need to start a blog because, you know, I make ad revenue.
Yeah.
I make a full-time salary with my ad revenue. So it's very, very hard for freelancers these days. And I don't know if it's going to get better. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. It's fun. And it gives you a little bit of prestige, but don't expect to make a lot of money. Don't even expect to make the amount of money that you should make for all the work it takes. So I'll leave that there.
No, well, that's actually good to know. Anyone who's listening to who's wanting to be an aspiring travel writer, it's a reality you have to face, and understanding the pluses and minuses of that sort of profession. So it's actually good to know. It's good to know.
Good.
And how long have you had your blog now?
13 years.
Man, that's a good amount of time. How did it all start? What made you start this whole journey?
Well, that's funny because I was freelance writing and one of the editors I worked with said, you should start a blog. And I honestly said, what's a blog? I had no idea what a blog was. And so I figured it out. And she said, you know, it's a place where you can house your writing. Instead of back in the day when we actually sent paper clips, when we were pitching a publication, you can just send people to your blog and they can see articles that you've written before. And so, you know, I started the blog and I was writing about parenting. I was writing about taking my kids to the zoo and places that I could go with my family. And after a while, I started writing a little bit about food and people really like that. And then I wrote a little bit about travel and people seemed to like that. And that's kind of how it all started.
Well, of all the places that you've been, what have been some of your favorites or some places that you wish you could revisit again?
Well, Australia is definitely one of my favorites. And because there's so much to see there, and I was only in, you know, a small part of the country on the East Coast, I would definitely like to go back. I absolutely fell in love with the Gold Coast. It was just my vibe, you know, beach and surfing and seafood and wonderful people. And of course, there's no language barrier. And it was fabulous. And that's really on the top of my list as for places I'd like to go back.
Would you live in Australia?
My husband would not live in Australia. So probably not.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I'm about getting ready to celebrate 30 years of marriage.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you. My husband says, if you could somehow freeze his body and get him to Australia and then thaw him out. He'd love it, but he does not love long flights. He's 6'2". He just, whereas I'm, you know, I like flying. I actually enjoy the whole process of getting there and being there. And so, yeah, it's one of the things that we differ on, but yeah, it's a long flight, but worth it.
Well, I'm actually right there with you with flying. I love going on planes too. It's, people think I'm crazy. I would rather sit in coach than first class. I've had a first class seat before, and I don't know, it was just weird. It was like, it was really nice by all means. It was a good experience, but for some reason, I don't know. I love flying and just sitting in coach. I don't know. It's just, I'm in this like little seat. I'm just kind of like got this little tunnel vision. My wife is next to me. And, you know, she's really small and I have like super broad shoulders. So it's nice. I can kind of just lean over into her seat a little bit. We cuddle next to each other, we watch movies, we play video games together. And I don't know, it's very peaceful. No one really bothers you. And in my opinion, I used to work in the car business and I was a sales manager for goodness years and nonstop all day. People were asking me questions the second I walked through the door. And then I just found this really great love of just sitting down in a seat and no one bothering me, you know, on the flight, except for, you know, do you want a beverage or what meal do you want? What about the flight process do you like the most?
Well, I do like first class. we'll differ there because, you know, I flew to Indonesia a while back and in coach, and to be honest, the airlines that in Asia are so much better than the airlines in the States. It's on a different level. I flew Qatar. I mean, it's just a different level. They
agreed.
Really treat you, even in coach. I mean, I was in coach and the woman next to me fell asleep and they were serving dinner. And I said, should I wake her? And she said, oh, absolutely not. I've made a note and when she wakes up, we'll serve her her hot dinner. I mean, come on. They do not do that in the States, you know? but I flew to Australia first class and I was so spoiled. It was magnificent. So I do like flying first class.
What airline was it to Australia?
Actually it was United.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But first class is just, I mean, you know, with the flatbed and all the nice amenities, it was really great.
Yeah. Even the airports, at least my home airport here in Denver, when I walk inside, just the way it smells, it's not like a bad smell. It's just how an airport smells. It's a strange sort of like psychological thing happens in my brain. Even if I'm not actually flying anywhere now, if I'll go pick up a friend, if I step inside, my heart starts to race. It's like, I just got like, you know, hit up with like caffeine. I just had like three cups of coffee and I'm just like, whoa, I'm so excited now just from like the smell of the inside of the airport, you know? It's weird.
I love traveling so much and that's all part of it. So I'm kind of with you on that. Just being in the airport, knowing that I'm going somewhere. It's a different thing when you're coming home though, because when I'm coming home and I've been gone for 2 weeks and I'm delayed and it's happening so much lately, it's not as much fun. I don't even mind the delays when I'm on my way there, as long as I am able to, you know, get my connecting flight. I was late leaving to go to Australia, so I was late arriving and I missed my flight from Sydney to Brisbane. And, you know, the guy's like, hey, if you wait another hour, I've got a first class spot. Because I was flying, I was already scheduled to fly first class. He said, if you go now, I don't have a first class spot. And I said, I'll wait an hour. So I went to the lounge, waited an hour, no big deal. You know, it was actually enjoyable. It's fine. Coming home, you know, you're just ready to come home, I think.
Yeah. What tips would you have for travelers to make their airport and flight experiences more comfortable, and maybe they might develop a love like us for just going places.
Well, because it's fresh in my memory, and that is overpacking. And I've had three trips where I overpacked. I took too much to Peru, and my suitcase kept popping open. And we were moving from one place to the next every couple of days. And here, the travel writer in the group has to stop and stuff her clothes back in her suitcase when it pops open in the parking lot at the airport. That same suitcase wouldn't stay closed the last few days I was in Italy last year. So in Australia, instead of packing lighter, I took a bigger suitcase because I was worried about the lock popping open on the very expensive suitcase that I took with me to Peru and to Italy. There was one hotel and an elevator, and I had to ask for help with my suitcase in Australia. It was a wonderful boutique hotel, just didn't have an elevator. So that was it. That was a defining moment. And I've always said, you need to be able to handle your own luggage. So right after that, my luggage was lost, only for a day, thankfully, on a short flight from Atlanta to Sarasota, not even a connecting flight. It was delivered the next day. But that would have been pretty terrible because, you know, I had a lot of things I didn't want to lose in that. So that was another factor. So I went to Alaska recently for 13 days with a carry-on, and it was great. And now that I've learned how to do it, plan to do it from now on because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen all the photos of the airports lately with all the bags unclaimed. So that would be my number one piece of advice. You don't need to take everything. If you take everything, you won't wear it all. If there's a possibility that you can wash clothes, I mean, I got laundry done. I was on a cruise and I got my laundry done once on the cruise, and it was $20 to fill a bag with laundry. Must have filled that bag with 25 pieces of laundry. And it to be able to carry on and not have to worry about a big piece of luggage, that's my biggest piece of advice.
Oh, okay. I like it. And how do you choose what to put into that smaller carry-on bag? How do you make that choice? Because some people have a hard time. You know, they do want to bring everything.
Well, that's why I've always had a hard time. you know, I put together outfits that I can wear again. Things like jeans, which if you knew me, I live in jeans. I love jeans, but they weigh a lot. So, you know, just pick out your outfits and have a hand scale and just weigh your bag. And you may have to switch some things out and add different things in, but, you know, get clothes that you can hang up, you can wash and hang up. I have a lot of clothes now that I can wash while I'm traveling. Even when I'm in a hotel for just a night or two, I can wash out some things. And it's worth it just to be able to not have to lug a big suitcase, not have to ask for help. That's how I choose. Plan your outfits, even put your outfits in single plastic bags to keep them together so you know what you're wearing, or have a list. I have a packing list on my site for different seasons, and I even use it just because I'll mark things down on it, what I'm wearing, and I put it in my suitcase, and I know, okay, I need to wash this because I'm wearing it again on Thursday. You know what I mean?
I will actually, I'll put in the show notes of the page if you send that packing list. I'd love for that to be a great resource for the listeners too.
Okay,
because that can always help. So that'll be in the show notes of the page. We'll reference that a little bit later on too. Okay. So carry on. Now, there's only one thing I'm going to add to your carry on, I guess, prestige and revelation of using carry ons and like packing a little bit less. Some airlines, at least internationally, will have a weight limit on carry-on bags. So you do have to be a little bit careful. And that's why you mentioned like the hand, you know, scale, you strap it around your bag and you kind of hold it up and it tells you how much it weighs. just right. because if it weighs too much, they'll force you to check it. So, which has happened to me before. I'm like, because here in the United States, a lot of times it's by size. It's not by weight. That thing can weigh 100 pounds, but if it still fits the size, they'll let you take it on. So just some of those international flights can be that way sometimes.
Right. Well, in Australia, actually, I had, believe it or not, a second bag because, you know, I was there for a conference and for ATE, Australia Tourism Exchange. And I was at one airport and they said my duffel was too big to carry on. Ooh. And they wanted me to pay, I think it was like $70.
Jeez.
And I said, no, mm-hmm. I said, no, it will absolutely fit. They said it won't fit in the overhead. I said, it will fit in the overhead. And I took it on and I didn't pay for it.
Oh,
nice. Because they have, you know, the example that the frame where you put mm-hmm. your bag in, and I shoved my bag in there and it worked. And so, yeah. So I carried it on and I didn't pay for it. And someone else had a bag smaller than mine and they paid for it. And I'm like, you know what? No.
Well, it's, you know, standing your ground sometimes and talking with them can go a long way. I'm glad you held your ground and like, this will fit. I'll make sure. If it doesn't, that's a different situation. But like, you're like, oh, it'll fit.
Right. Confidence. If I was on the plane and they said it doesn't fit, believe me, I wouldn't argue with them. Yeah. But I knew it would fit and it did. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, so many carriers too can... They're all trying to find ways, you know, to make money. They have to be profitable. And I had a situation where I had bought tickets. I forgot the airline, Malindo Airlines or something like that. We were flying from, I think, Taipei to Malaysia or somewhere around there in Southeast Asia. And I bought it on like a secondary site. I think I bought the tickets on Kayak or something like that. And I knew that my bag was too heavy. It was a carry-on size. I knew it'd be too heavy. I tried to buy the extra baggage, you know, online on their website. And there's a comment on their website saying you have to buy the, you know, your checked baggage fee at the airport. Okay, fine. I'll go do it at the airport. So I go to the airport and this is no exaggeration. They wanted to charge me an extra $350 for the checked bags because I waited until they get to the airport. And our tickets together only cost, goodness, like $150 each. So the baggage fee cost more than our tickets. And I made this huge, I guess, stink. I didn't yell at anybody, but I was pretty upset because I told them like, no, it says, and I went on their website and actually showed them, you know, what their baggage fee should be for this flight. And then they refuse to honor it. And so I'm like, okay, this is going nowhere. I'm holding up the line. So I actually upgraded to a business class seat, which allowed two carry-on bags, which was less money than paying for that. Yeah. Which, I mean, it was terrible, but now it can be interesting situations when airlines and the baggage can be an issue. So right. Always know it. And sometimes even still, they can be a difficult situation. So, but hey, right. I still love flying though, even though that happened. So it's
right.
So,
right.
It makes for an interesting story, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
I do want to talk about Peru a little bit. We're going to hit that up just a little bit later on in the interview, just because I'm going to Peru in October. So
okay.
I'm interested to hear some of your thoughts on that. And I want to talk a little more about Australia as well. But okay. I'm really curious about this whole skydiving situation because you emailed me some things about you and how the first time you were on a plane was skydiving. And
yes,
that was interesting how you completed 3 skydives before you ever actually landed in a plane.
Yes.
How did that start? I mean,
I was
that sounds
18,
so great.
18 and invincible. That's how I had some friends that said, hey, let's go skydiving. And I had never been in a plane. And I said, let's go, let's do it. And up in the plane, the guy, I was just amazed because I'd never been up in a plane. And just looking down at the ground, I was just like, wow. And the guy said, you act like you've never been in a plane before. And I said, yeah, this is my first time. And he was just floored. And I almost backed out. I got a little scared because this was back in the day when it wasn't tandem. This was static line.
Whoa, so, you interesting.
Know, they had a line that was hooked to the plane that uh-huh. opened your chute.
Yeah.
And you just had to make sure that you knew what to do if your chute didn't open. That was basically the class, the 8-hour class that I took, was knowing that if your chute in back doesn't open, you've got to open your chute in front manually. And in their words, it can rip your face off. So make sure that you punch it out. If you have to open it, the first thing you do is you pull the loop and then you punch it out with your other hand so that it doesn't rip your face off.
Whoa. What were your feelings? I mean, learning all this for your first time in a plane.
I you know, again, I was 18. I was with a bunch of friends. We were having fun. And once I did it the first time, I did it. I think I did it the second time in the same day.
Whoa.
And then I came back for a third time and then that was it. You know,
yeah,
it was great. Yeah.
It seems like you've always had that sort of adventurous spirit, you know, to try new things.
I do like trying new things. You know, you only go around once and why not make it the best you can?
Well, what contributed to this adventurous spirit? I mean, was it something in your childhood? I know a lot of people when their younger years or, you know, adolescent years, teenage years can affect how they look at food and travel. So did your upbringing affect your adventurous?
No. I can't say that it did. My parents never traveled. I probably never left the state of Maryland with my family.
Gotcha.
No, let me think. No, I don't think I ever did. You know, I didn't start traveling like this until I was 50.
Oh,
and and a whole new world opened up to me. I just found it exhilarating. You know, I had been out of the country with my husband and my daughters to Puerto Rico, Costa Rica, and Virgin Islands, but I'd never been, of course, never been to Asia, never been to South America, you know, never been to mm-hmm. Europe. You know, when the first time I was actually invited to go on a trip out of the country, the realization that a tourism board thought enough of me as a creator to pay me to tour their country for 2 weeks in exchange for writing about it just kind of blew my mind. And it was magical. And I made so many friends on that trip and learned more about the business of travel writing and travel blogging. It wasn't anything to do with my childhood at all. It really didn't happen until many, many years later.
And what country did you travel to for that trip where they paid you for 2 weeks?
Indonesia.
Indonesia? Oh,
that was Indonesia.
Geez. Where mm-hmm. in Indonesia did you go?
Oh, all over. Really, gosh, probably the most interesting place was Raja Ampat, because, you know, if you cruise, you know, a lot of the cruise lines employ a lot of people from Indonesia. And I love telling the guys that I meet on the cruise lines that I've been to Raja Ampat and not one of them has ever been. Because it's so far, it takes so long to get there. It was an entire day of traveling just to get to Raja Ampat, which is right next to Papua, Indonesia. An entire day just to get there. And then we were there, I think, for 3 days. So that was just, you know, that was just incredible. But we went all over the country, except for Bali.
Oh,
we didn't spend any time in Bali. And people are like, oh, you must have loved Bali. And I'm like, I can't believe I didn't get to Bali. So I guess I really need to go back.
Well, yeah, it gives you a reason. Oh, yeah, I got to go to Bali. You know, went to Indonesia, but yeah. There it is.
And while I was in Indonesia, I was like, I'm so close I'm so close to Australia. I'm so close to New Zealand, you know, but what can you do?
What can you do? No. Well, yeah. And how did you land that opportunity?
I have no idea. They just, you know, they reach out to me. They find me through a lot of different sources. They can find me on Twitter. They can find me on Instagram. Or they just Google, you know, travel writers. I could have met someone at IMM, you know, mm-hmm. International Media Marketplace, yeah. Or TBEX. You know, you never know. It could happen years later. And I did meet a lot of representatives of Australia at IMM. So,
okay,
you know,
cool.
Who knows? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And you said you didn't really start traveling real intensely until you were, you know, 50. And what sparked the travel? Was it just that, or was something else that kind of started this whole thing of more intense travel?
No, it was Indonesia.
Okay,
it was
cool.
Really that trip, the different culture, and, you know, not just the place, but being surrounded by 24 other travel writers. It was new to me because I was really still writing a lot about food and a lot about local travel, but this was a big deal. This was, you know, across the world. So I think Indonesia, it was really, really the big aha moment for me.
Yeah.
You know, and funny story, while I was on that trip, we had one day in Raja Ampat where we climbed this landing where we could all take pictures, and you could only have, like, I think 4 or 5 people up on the landing at a time. And of course there were other tourists there because it's a very special place. And the view of the islands is just unbelievable. I think it was like 350 steps to get up to the top. And I got up to the top and I was such a sweaty mess. I mean, my hair was stuck to my head and I had on a t-shirt and shorts, and I'm up there with 4 other women travel writers, and they had backpacks. It never occurred to me, why are they carrying their backpacks up these 300 steps, you know? And they are pulling out dresses and barrettes and hairbrushes.
Gotcha.
And I thought, I did not get the memo. You know, this was new to me, this whole influencer
thing.
It was all new to me. But it was a defining moment. It was a moment that made me realize, you know, my photos were great of that view, but I wasn't in them. So was I really there? You know, as far as my readers go, I can get photos all day long and put them on my site, but I need to be a little more prepared when in situations like that. I'm not going to carry a dress. I'm probably not going to carry a bathing suit and all of that, but, you know, I would have liked to have freshened up just a little bit, been able to brush my hair or something, because that photo is mine and mine alone. No one will ever see it.
Oh, man. I was like, that would be the perfect, like, cover photo for this podcast. No. Well, that's actually really good advice that I know I would have never thought of either, that even for people just taking photos for themselves or their personal Instagram or just for their own, to show their family and friends, just to freshen up, like you said, just a little bit for those really nice photos, and to maybe bring those along. That's something that would have never crossed my mind at all to even think about. So yeah, anyone who's listening, that's good.
If you were to Google Raja Ampat Outlook, I think the first photo that comes up is from someone I was on the trip with, and it's beautiful. And it's actually from behind, and you can tell it's her, but she was smart. She freshened up. She had a pretty dress on, and it's a fantastic photo. Like I said, I had no idea. So I wasn't ready.
Okay, I'm looking up photos right now. Okay, it's very beautiful. I can see why you decided to make the climb and to take some time to take a few photos. Goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. If you're listening, yeah, take a little time and just Google that really quick.
Or just go to my site.
Or go to your site. Yes. I'll link to it in the show notes. Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Wonderful.
So make it nice and easy. And all the podcast players too, they all have like a show notes section, and I'll make sure I add some of those links in there so you guys can just click on those really, really easily. But yeah, so that's great that Indonesia really transformed that whole mindset. And what did you do before you did all this travel writing and stuff? I know you mentioned you're a freelancer, or I'm not sure how long you did that for.
Well, I was a stockbroker many years ago. And, I wanted to stay home with my kids, which I did. And then I got bored, and I really didn't want to go back into working, 10, 12 hour days to go back into the brokerage business. So that's when I started writing, and that the writing led to the blogging.
And what did you start writing off with?
Parenting.
Parenting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just wrote about taking my kids to the zoo and, things that I could do with my family. And it was really kind of like, it was a personal blog. It was just a personal account of the things I was doing. A lot of those posts are no longer on my site because my writing wasn't as good as it is now. Hopefully it's better. And my life is different now. My kids are grown. My daughters actually, I live in Florida. My daughters actually live in Toronto.
Okay.
And we're not Canadian, but they went to college in right outside of Toronto, and they're both professional animators. So, the writing about kids really isn't. It's not what I write about anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. No, I totally get it.
But I still have those articles because, like I said, they're kind of a personal account of what we did when they were, 5 and 8. Yeah, it was still a lot of fun. But I've pivoted now.
Yeah. No. Totally. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And with all your traveling, you've been to so many great places. Why is it so important to you to write about these things and share your experiences with the world on food and travel?
I didn't know what I was missing. And I feel that way about people who don't travel a lot. And like I said, life is really short, and I want to see as much of the world as I can in the time I'm here. And if I can tell people, hey, you know what? Indonesia is amazing, and the people are so friendly, and most of them speak English. Did you know you can take a cooking class in Thailand that's run by a guy from the States who actually gives back to the community from your participation. There are trips you can take with groups of people in your age bracket, or just with families, or just solo. I took a trip to Peru with G Adventures, and I'm still in touch with people who were in my group from that trip. So people think, oh, I can't travel. I'm single. I wouldn't be able to go by myself. Go with a group. You absolutely can. Or did you know that you can take a river cruise and see 3 or 4 countries in a week? It's a great way to get a taste and see what you love the most, so you can go back and take more time to explore. And I just don't think a lot of people know these things, which is why I love sharing my travel stories.
The river cruise thing, I'm like, I've actually never even thought about that. And I've traveled a lot going on a river cruise and like seeing a couple. That actually sounds really nice. That sounds really relaxing and fun.
And what is so great about river cruises is the cruise ship docks. First of all, it's a small ship, which is nice. And it docks right in like major cities, because it's small enough to do that. You get off the ship and you walk into this, the city.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's really, my husband will go on a river cruise any day. But the large cruise ships, he really doesn't have a lot of interest. But he absolutely loves river cruises because, you know, when you have those excursions, you don't have to get in a bus for the most part. Once in a while you might, but if you do get on a bus, it's a short trip just to get to the excursion. But, you know, some of the excursions on the larger cruises, especially in Asia, I mean, it was a 2-hour bus ride to get somewhere to spend 2 hours and a 2-hour bus ride back. And that's not always fun.
What was one of your favorite river cruises that you've been on?
I think it would have to be the Rhine, where we took our kids. And it was fantastic. My younger daughter was turning 18. My older daughter was turning 21. And my husband and I had been married for 25 years. So we decided about a year before that we were going to do something special. And that was a really special trip to be able to take our kids first time to Europe. That has to be my favorite, though the Danube was spectacular and so was the Rhone. But being able to take my kids was really, really incredible.
I bet it was to share that, especially when they're a little bit older too. I know when I traveled with my parents a few times when I was older, of course, you know, the memories stick a little bit different. And then you see your family in that sort of different way from the normal home environment. You can see them in a relaxed setting and a fun vacation setting. And then in a way, you know, a little bit of adventure too, because you're in a whole different country, new experiences, tastes, flavors, and everything. So, okay, oh, man, I have to put that on my list to things to try, because I've been on a couple of normal large cruises and I thought those were fun. Those are relaxing. They have a purpose. I think they can be a great addition to someone's, I guess, travel history of things to do. And I just never considered a river cruise. I've only seen a few commercials on TV and they looked okay. So I guess maybe it didn't pique my interest, but now the way you're kind of talking about it, I'm like, okay, I can rock a river cruise and have a good time.
you totally could. And we extended and spent some extra time in Amsterdam and went to the Van Gogh. And, you know, my kids are both artists. So going to the Van Gogh Museum was probably one of the highlights. And there's a photo of me crying on that post about that cruise because my oldest daughter showed me the Doctor Who episode of Van Gogh. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't.
And I cried right at the table and she's laughing and I'm crying. It's just spectacular where they bring Van Gogh back and show him what an impact he's had on the world. Oh. So right after going to that museum and seeing that episode, it was crazy. And it's such a great memory. So I know my girls, in fact, I actually have the YouTube video on that article about that cruise. So maybe you can put that in the show notes too, and people can take a look at that. But that,
absolutely.
It was definitely a wonderful trip with our family.
Yeah. Well, that's the important thing about travel. I hate a lot of commercials, but Expedia put out a pretty good one with Ewan McGregor. And he is talking about, I mean, the setting is kind of interesting. It's an interesting commercial in general. And I'll link to it in the show notes. I'll put on link it from YouTube or somewhere, where he's like kind of walking through these different stage areas. And he's talking about how people don't regret, you know, buying things and having more stuff. They regret not making memories, you know, and they regret not traveling more and doing more with their families and loved ones. And it puts it into that perspective of, okay, it's about experiences, not things. And when you share such a special moments with the people you love when you travel, it makes sense to kind of contribute the money that you make less towards the stuff and more towards the experiences.
Yes.
I just love that about travel in general. You know, I'm glad too, like just such a powerful memory you just shared that was exciting and something that was even me as an experienced traveler, kind of, you know, a revelation of like, oh, you know, river cruises, you know, I didn't even think about it. So
Right. Just
you sharing that now, even I'm learning, you know, it's such a good thing that we talk about these things and share experiences. So I love it.
Yeah. I'm glad I could help.
Yeah, absolutely. So where have you traveled recently? What are some of your most recent, I guess, experiences in like the past year or so?
Well, let's see. As I mentioned, I was in Australia just about 6 weeks ago, and that was amazing. Just before that, I went to Riviera Maya, Mexico. And in fact, one of the questions that you had asked me was about a favorite meal that I wish everyone could experience. And one of those was in Mexico, at Hotel Escaret, Riviera Maya. So,
I want to talk about that now. What did you eat there? I'm excited.
Chef Carlos Gatan is the first Mexican chef to earn a Michelin star, and he has a restaurant there called Ha. And I was invited to the resort mainly for this dining experience created by him and another chef, Pino Pazotero from Vancouver. The food was so good, it brought tears to my eyes. These two chefs were so good together, and the dishes were just insane, and they were all paired with fabulous wine, and it was a pinch me kind of night. I think the meal ended around midnight. I think we were still eating dessert, and I looked at my phone, and it was midnight, because it was just so many courses and so many bottles of wine, some of them from Mexico, which I had no idea that I'd find great wine in Mexico, but I actually did. So it was magical. It was just a really, really magical meal.
And what time did you start the meal?
I want to say around 8.
Oh, right. 4-hour meal. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And the seafood and just the fusion and the pairing, it was just really, really fantastic.
Was there one dish that you can tell us about that just stood out to you, if you can remember one?
You know, there was a tuna dish that we started with that was just unbelievable, and presented so beautifully. It was raw tuna, so like a ceviche, and it was just crazy. Crazy.
Well, it's great how chefs can really elevate flavors and make new flavor combos that you didn't know ever existed, and you didn't know food could taste a certain way. You know, like that's so fun.
It's absolutely true. And in fact, that was something else that you had asked. I'm trying to remember. I think you said something about what meals have changed the way you look at and understand food.
Yeah.
I thought was a fantastic question. And I couldn't say a meal, but I could say shopping at local markets have changed the way I look at and understand food. Back to Asia, I was on a 20-day cruise in Asia, and you know, by myself, because my husband works and just couldn't get away. And my sister was supposed to go with me, and then she couldn't get away. So I said, well, I'm going. You know, I've already picked the dates out and I'm going. And so I ended up hanging out with one of the guys that led tours for the ship. And so this one day we were on an excursion, and everyone else was, he said, this is your free time. You know, these are some things you can do. And he turned to me and he said, we're going to the market. Do you want to try some street food? And I was so excited because they had been there multiple times. They knew exactly where to go. And we walked through the market and I saw things I'd never seen. And he stopped and explained things to me, which is another thing that I love to do, is I love to take tours in different cities. And it's a great way to give back to the cities, to support these people that are doing this within the cities, you know, whether it's a brewery tour or a restaurant tour or, you know, a walking history and food tour. There always has to be some kind of food element for me. But
of course,
I love doing the food tours. And so in different cities, being able to go to the markets, and when I can, I bring things home. I bring spices home. You know, obviously I can't bring seeds and food, actual food home, but anything I can bring, even a dish towel. I brought back a dish towel that I loved from Italy, and, you know, things like that. So that when I create Italian dishes, I can use that. So I love shopping and I love the little local markets.
So that whole street food experience, what was something that you tried that you weren't expecting?
Oh, you know, I would have to look back through my Instagram. I'm sure I captured it. But I honestly, I couldn't tell you off the top.
Oh, no, no. I know. Sometimes it's hard to reach back when you've had so many great food memories to like pinpoint this one thing. So that's cool.
I know I ate something that I probably would not have eaten on my own. There was one thing and I was like, oh, I don't think so. It was a prepared food, obviously, not like a fruit or vegetable. And the guy said, I'm telling you, you have to try this. And I was so glad I did. And I'll have to look back to see if I can find out what that was, but I couldn't tell you right now.
Yeah. Well, food tours and having someone walk you through, especially if maybe you're a little intimidated. Like I know I have a lot of friends who are hesitant to do those sort of experiences and try new foods because they don't know what to try. And they're scared of eating the food and it tasting bad, or maybe they're just intimidated by the whole thing and overwhelmed. So having a guide to get you through these markets, and I know you know from experience, but some of these markets they're very crowded. There are a lot of things going on. And for me, that is very exciting. I love the energy. I love all the people. I love all the unique and different smells. And then when you eat, you have all these unique and different kind of flavors. But to a lot of people, they just don't know where to start. So it's good that you mentioned a tour, because so many people forget about that option. And even if you're an experienced traveler, I mean, still, like, going on a tour can just open your eyes and the opportunities that you didn't know existed before. So, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's really good.
Yeah. And, you know, you also have to think about a lot of these big markets. They're catering to restaurants and chefs that are coming there to buy their fresh produce and their fresh seafood and whatever for the day. They're not catering to tourists as much. And Correct. It can be very, very overwhelming, but having a guide, it just really makes it so much better, because those guides have been there before. When the different vendors see the guide, they know, oh, you know, I need to take care of this group. And when you go to restaurants on tours, usually the portions are so large and you have a seat waiting for you, even in a busy restaurant, because the tour guide has already reserved the table. You really do get great treatment, and they really want to show off their food because they know that these people that have booked these tours are going to be posting to Instagram. It really is a great way to get a taste of a new city.
Even for me, with some fruits and vegetables, there are some really unique things that I had no idea existed. And then if I were to pick up this fruit, I wouldn't know how to eat it. And people listening might be, well, you put it in your mouth, you chew and you swallow. not all the time. Have you seen like some people have never seen a durian before? Like, how do you eat a durian? You know,
you just don't eat a durian. You just don't. No, I'm kidding.
I know. Well, durian is a very unique sort of fruit from Southeast Asia. If people are unfamiliar, and it has a reputation for being very pungent, very almost like a French cheese kind of smell. And then it's like, when you eat it, it's like lightly sweet and like a custard. It's actually very delicious. I like durian. I think it was great, but it can have a very off-putting kind of smell. And then it comes in this really big, spiky, thick-skinned exterior. And if you're to see it, you're like, I don't know what to do with this. or like a mangosteen is like another one. It's this like dark purple brown type of fruit. And it's like, same thing, really thick skin. And then it has almost, it almost looks like an orange after it's peeled, almost like how it looks like on the inside. But it's like this weird, soft, juicy fruit with like a big seed. And it's so delicious too.
It's so delicious. I agree.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you have to have people kind of show you those things because you have no idea what to expect. I'm sure it's comical too to watch some tourists for them to be like, how do they handle this? Like, how are they going to try to figure out how to eat this thing? So,
right. Just go to YouTube and watch people with jackfruit too. You know, it's hilarious. People have no idea what to do with it. And
oh man,
it's a handful.
Literally. Know? Yes. It really can just, it can be very tough. Oh,
right.
Goodness. All right. Well, I want to talk more and more about Australia too, since it's like fresh in your mind. You just went there. I have not been to Australia. I've been told it's one of those must visit kind of places, but I feel like I don't have like a reason to go yet. There's nothing that's drawing me there. So how would you convince me that Australia is amazing and I should be going?
Well, you know, first of all, as I said, there's no language barrier. And the people are so nice. Everywhere I went, I was making friends. I mean, when you ask, could I live there? You know, if my husband would agree with me and my kids would come, I could, because it's just such a friendly place, beautiful place. And I got to go, you know, to Brisbane and Gold Coast. But I also got to go to Orange, and it was just the beginning of fall. So there are the different seasons. The wine is unbelievable. If you like wine,
love the seafood
is, the wine, let me tell you, we went to a lot of wineries. And in fact, I need to write something just about the wine there, because it was fantastic. Just, you know, I loved everything about it. The wildlife, the kangaroos, the koalas. I mean, you just have to go once. Just really have to go once. And if you go, talking about tours, I took a tour with a company called Kif and Culture, and it was absolutely fantastic. And I hope that if I go back, that they're doing tours wherever I go, because I would love to do that again.
What made the tour with them so great?
Well, they knew all the places to go. You know, we went to breweries, we went to a gin distillery. Boy, I'm showing what I love here. And we went to a restaurant. And of course the name is escaping me, and it's Rick Shores, which is a very famous restaurant. And you know, they just, the food was great, and the tour guide had this laugh that was so infectious that every time he laughed, everyone laughed with him. It was just the kind of tour that was, from the moment we met him until we all hugged him goodbye. It was just a fantastic tour.
Oh, that's good to hear. Okay. And what city or what area did you love the most?
It's between Brisbane and Gold Coast. I didn't get to spend more time in Brisbane. I wish I could have spent more time in Gold Coast. But, you know, there's so much to see there. As much as I'd like to go back to Gold Coast, I'd also like to go to some other parts of the country. You know, it's just Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much to see. And of course, we a lot of us took trips after the conference, and I had met friends that I stayed in touch with, and they were posting on Instagram the places they went. I was like, oh, I should have gone there, or I should have gone there, because every place just looked fantastic. So there's just really so much to see, but it's different at the same time that there's no language barrier. It's still a different culture, but it really is so laid back. Everything you hear about it just being so laid back is true. They just, it's a wonderful country. You've got to go.
Yeah.
You have to go, Chris.
All right. It is inevitable. I am going to make sure I go to Australia soon. Well,
yes.
My wife and I we leave in September for a long trip through like Mexico, Central South America. And then if we have time, then I was like, well, by then it will be, you know, warm in Australia. Maybe we can just zip over there real quick. Well, not real quick. It's still a long flight, but
yeah, definitely a long flight, but yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, if we can make it there this year, well, technically it would be like January, February of next year, mm-hmm. when by the time we have time to go to Australia, but that'd be a real treat. And I'm looking at pictures of Gold Coast, and it looks fake. Like how beautiful it looks there. I'm like, wow, this is a city. Like that's pretty amazing.
It is just really beautiful. And unfortunately we did get quite a bit of rain, and it was unexpected. And you know, what do you do about the weather? They gave us umbrellas, and we just still had a blast even in the rain.
Perfect.
You know, so it was great.
And what food that, if you can just name one dish that you had over in Australia, something that you ate there that was just mind-blowingly great, you loved it, what would it be?
You know, we had at Rick Shores, we had fish, like a ceviche, that was just exquisite. It was one of the best things I've ever tasted. And we also had these rolls that were kind of like lobster rolls, but they were, you know, and I'm not positive whether it was lobster. I have to look back, but it was fried and then put in the roll. And normally I try to stay on the healthier side, but of course I had to taste it. And once I tasted it, I was like, oh my gosh, it was so good. The food there was really just amazing. Really amazing. And I haven't written about it yet because I just, you know, haven't had time yet, but that's coming up.
Yeah.
So I will be posting those photos, and I'm sure I've already posted it on Instagram, but it was fantastic.
Yeah. I'm excited to try some of that food. I love seafood. It's probably one of my favorite things ever. That's why I loved when I was in Lisbon last year, ate like all the seafood as much as I possibly could like handle. Wherever I go, if there's seafood by the coast, just that's all I will eat, because I'm in a landlocked state in you know, Colorado. So seafood's okay here. It's just not the same as that freshly caught. And then when it's prepared so well, and when you know how to make it, just like when you said ceviche, you know, like, oh, I bet that was just a wonderful, delicious treat. I'm so glad that you had a chance to eat it.
And I have not been to Lisbon, so I'm pretty jealous there, but that's high on my list.
Oh, Lisbon was one of my favorite places. If I could live in like another country, Lisbon might be number one for like a long-term place, just with everything they have for the food, decent transportation. The people were nice. The culture was very, very unique. They have a unique kind of like types of music, it's called Fado, which is a melancholy kind of music that they sing. with like a guitarist. It's all sorts of stuff. Anyways, but I don't want to get into too much of that. It was just wonderful. So if you ever go to Lisbon, I know that if you like seafood, then it will definitely be your type of place for sure.
Right. I just looked up that roll, and it's called a fried Moreton Bay bug roll. And I remember being like, bug, and it's just what they call that particular type of seafood there, a bug roll. But it was fantastic. And back to Portugal, if you have not connected with two food trippers, that would probably be a great couple to interview because they are living there now.
Actually, they were one of my sources. I didn't talk to them personally, but I read through their blog on like Lisbon and Portugal, and a lot of the resources were very, very helpful, I think, for sure.
I traveled with them last year when I went to Italy and Spain, and we had a great time together, and they're so knowledgeable. So definitely for anyone who wants to go to Portugal, they have a lot of resources.
Yeah. Where'd you go in Spain?
I was on a cruise. So Barcelona and, where else did I go? Oh, see, caught me off guard again.
Yeah. I'm just curious now.
two stops in Spain, and, two stops in Italy.
Wonderful.
Yeah. We ended in Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Spain is wonderful.
Yeah.
Rome was okay when I went. I want to give Italy another shot. I didn't have the best experiences. I actually had a podcast episode where I talked to Shelley Ruel, and we did a whole podcast episode about Rome, and she has a whole website that she helps run. And I talked about my experiences in Rome, and I'm like, okay, I got to give it another shot. And then I also want to go more to like the northern part too, where like Bologna is in the Emilia-Romagna region of Italy, where they have a lot of really, really good food. Just a little bit different there, a little pace of life compared to Rome, because Rome is just a really big city, an ancient city, and it was beautiful. So I want to give it another shot for sure.
Yeah, we went to Sicily and then ended in Rome. Like I said, started in Barcelona and then went to Palma de Mallorca. And it was beautiful. But if I were to be totally honest, Rome isn't my favorite city.
Okay,
I got
good.
Lost.
I feel invalidated.
Yeah, I got lost and I felt like people really didn't care to help me. You know, I mean, I've been to a lot of places where there's a language barrier and you can work through it. Mm-mm. And they just weren't even interested in working through it. They just, you know, sorry.
Oh, I agree with
just
you.
Ignored me. But I'm kind of like you. Like, I'd like to, there's so much to see there. There's so much history. Maybe I would try it again, but there are so many other places in Italy that I'd love to see. I mean, I've been to Florence. I'd like to go back. I'd love to go spend more time in Sicily. And the Amalfi Coast is, you know, like top of my list. But yeah, Rome was a disappointment, and I guess they just don't care enough because they don't need to.
Yeah,
everyone's going to come there regardless. So
yeah,
I hate to say it, but
no, yeah, I definitely agree. I had that feeling too, and I want to give it another shot. And one of the things that I had problems with, I got turned away from a lot of restaurants, and these weren't nice. These weren't popular restaurants. These were like kind of like local kind of spaces. So I think maybe because I was obviously a tourist because I went right when they opened, because a lot of times if you don't have a reservation, even though I'm not even sure they even took reservations, but I went right when they opened. So I know that the restaurant would not be full of people. And they're like, no, we're full. We can't seat you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I haven't told them, like, it's you guys just opened. There's no one inside. Like, no, we're full.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I understand. Right. And these are just normal, you know, trattorias. They're not like, you know, a nice upscale restaurant. However, Rome, I did have one of the best tasting wine menu kind of like pairings ever. Like, it was at a restaurant called Marzipan, and
making a note.
It was great. I mean, I've eaten at some great restaurants. I've eaten at 3 Michelin stars, top, you know, restaurants, top 5 restaurants in the world. And Marzipan in Rome was one of the best tasting menus I've ever had. And it was only like $75 per person. And it was like ours was like 10 courses or something. It was so good. And they asked us if we wanted a wine pairing. I was like, yeah, sure. And if you're experienced in some fine dining, you know, wine pairings will cost anywhere from like $150 to $300 per person for a wine pairing. And I didn't ask. I was like, okay, sure. You know, we're just kind of in the mood. We're on vacation. And the wine pairing was like $35.
Wow.
And here's the best part. When I finish my glass of wine, because they, you know, they only give you like 2 ounces to pair with your food because you're going to get, you know, 5, 6, 7 glasses of wine with your 10 course meal. So they only give you a little bit. But once I finish mine, they just refilled it. You know, here are a few more ounces. I'm like, wow, this is great. And I will, if I ever go back to Rome, that's the first restaurant that will be on my list is Marzipan. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, I had one of the best meals I've ever had in Rome as well.
Ooh, what was it?
The restaurant, and I don't know if my pronunciation is right, but it's Pane Salame. It's P-A-N-E. And then E and then S-A-L-A-M-E. And the charcuterie board was as big as my desk. I mean,
oh, nice.
It and you can choose, you know, you just, it's kind of like a sushi menu, but instead you're picking out cheeses and meats. And it was unbelievable. In fact, after that trip and that meal, I bought some small jars with small spoons so that I could add them to my charcuterie boards because I love making them and I do it a lot. And so I'll put, you know, honey in one of the jars and fig spread in another jar and maybe tomato spread or eggplant spread in another jar and put those like along the board. And, you know, that's dinner for us.
Yeah,
we're empty nesters now, and I'll tell you, we make a charcuterie board, and I love making them. So my husband's like, "Yeah, charcuterie tonight," and we open a bottle of wine, and that's dinner. You know, you don't need anything else. So it was fantastic. So add that to your list for when you go back.
Yes,
and marzipan is on my list.
Well, I'm looking at pictures of the charcuterie boards just online, and that thing is. What in the world? It's like a surfboard coming to your table.
It's crazy.
Like full. Whoa. Oh, it looks crazy. Wonderful. It looks really wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see why that's one of your favorites. And I do admit Italian just makes some great food. The experience of a lot of things in Rome were terrible, but the food was, I have to admit, was top notch. One of my favorite, I guess, aged kind of like salamis was some called culatello. And I could never find it anywhere at all. I could not find culatello. And then, of course, where it comes from Italy. So I finally found culatello on the menu. I wanted to try it. It was just sublime. It's crazy. It's like the like pork shoulder, and it's marinated in wine. And then it's put into the pig's like bladder and like tied up. And it's like hung for like 3 years. And then, right. And then after that,
And it really tastes delicious, right?
Oh. That's crazy. It was, it had such, it's almost like the texture, it sounds kind of gross, but it's the best way I can describe it. It was kind of like a fruit roll up, like the texture. It was kind of like just a little bit like not rubbery, but just had a little bit of like oomph to it, a little bit more of like that thicker kind of stretchy kind of texture. And it was just so beautiful. It's unlike any other charcuterie meat. Sliced meat I've ever had in my life, and it was wonderful. So
yeah, you know, you and I could talk about food for hours because back to Mexico to Hotel Escaret, they have a brunch. It's only on Sundays, I believe, but it is the most unbelievable brunch I've ever been to. And I thought I had walked all around, and then I discovered there was this stone room in the back that was just charcuterie. Oh. It was just, I know. I was like, I have arrived and this is where I want to live forever.
Exactly.
And it was just unbelievable. That room alone was unbelievable. And outside of that room was you know, lobster and shrimp mm-hmm. and clams and oysters and just everything that you would have mm-hmm. at a normal brunch that has a lot of seafood and desserts. The desserts were just crazy. But that room in the back was just, okay, I'll just stay here. Can I move my table into this room, please? And oh, it was fantastic.
Oh, my mouth is watering just like you're talking about it. I'm like, yeah. Oh,
it's a really, really fantastic resort and it's all inclusive. I'm not positive if the brunch is part of the all inclusive. I can't imagine. There's got to be an upcharge for that brunch, but I'm not sure. but you know, you can go at Hotel Escarette, you can go to like, I don't know, more than 10 different parks where they have activities and it's all inclusive. It's all, you know, it all comes with your room. It's crazy.
That's perfect.
I kept having to ask, wait, this is really included? I mean, I travel a lot, but I kept having to wait, this too? It really was crazy.
Oh yeah. I was like, are you sure? Because I'm going to eat all of this. I'm going to do all these things. Are you sure it's included? Okay, good.
Right.
Now I have to ask about Peru. So where did you go in Peru? Cause that's going to be in October. I'm really excited. We're going to be staying in Lima. So mm-hmm. I'm just curious about your experience overall with Peru and maybe any tips or advice that you have for me.
Yeah. Again, I took a food tour in Peru that was absolutely fantastic. And Lima's fantastic. We went to Sacred Valley. We went, of course, to Machu Picchu. Cusco was absolutely mind-blowing. You know, just the history again. It's so beautiful. And the food there again, I thought the food was great everywhere. I did not eat guinea pig. It freaked me out a little bit just to see the sticks with the guinea pig on the end of it, like in barrels along the road. It just, and the whole guinea pig there, like some things I just can't do. I really heard it tastes like chicken, but I didn't do the guinea pig, but yeah, it's so different, which is what I loved about it. You know, you go some places and you're like, well, you know, this is cool, but I could kind of do this at home. So it was fantastic. One day we learned all about the different kinds of potatoes and the potato, it's not called a potato bank, but it's like a potato bank where they have all the seeds from all the different kinds of potatoes that have been discovered. And it was fascinating. Yeah.
My wife's like favorite food is potatoes. So her head's going to explode when she gets there. Like, oh my gosh, I want to try all the potatoes, fry them and bake them and mash them and do whatever you want. She's going to be one of those people that will try all the potatoes. And I love cooking. So we're going to get an Airbnb and I'm going to experiment with cooking with some of those different potato varieties then. That's pretty cool.
The tour that I took, we did a little cooking class and made calzone.
Cool.
That was really fun. And speaking of potatoes, in Lima, there was one day that I was like, you know, I just kind of feel like a burger. And the hotel I was staying in had a burger and fries. And I think they were the best fries I've ever eaten. And,
yes.
You know, I'm not a huge potato fan in general, but I do think French fries are my favorite food. I'm embarrassed to say it, but I do think fries are my favorite food. Yeah. And these fries were spectacular. So she'll have a good time there.
I think so. So was Machu Picchu worth it to you? Because it can be an expense to go to some of these like sites, and we're definitely budget travelers going for long periods of time. So I was debating whether or not that would be worth the time and the money to go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You have to.
All right.
You have to do it. You know, I think that there is definitely going to be a time when you won't be able to do it like we can do it now. And rightfully so, because, you know, the more people that travel there, the less it's going to stay totally intact, so to speak. You know, I mean, walking up and down these these steps that are, you know, eventually they're crumbling away. It is so, you do have to get a ticket in advance. So it's not like you can get there that day and say, oh, I want to go to Machu Picchu, you know. And they do only allow a certain number of people. But I've heard, I don't know how much of it is totally true, but I have heard that they are going to limit it even more. And you want it to stay intact. You know, there are a lot of places in Mexico that you can't walk up to it and touch it, you know, and you can walk up to everything in Machu Picchu and touch it.
Wow. You know? Okay. Interesting.
And so, you know, not that you should, you know, because the, you know, the oil on your hands and you know, you've probably heard that when you, when you go some places, they tell you not to touch. We traveled all through it. And I think that you won't be able to do that forever. So I would say if you're going, do it. If you still can, absolutely do it.
All right. With such confidence, I think for sure. I mean, you've convinced me.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. It's bucket list. It's bucket list. You can't go to Peru and not do it.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, Peru is exciting. So I'm going to go to, so I only have the first three places we're going to go. We're going to go off first Mexico City, and then we're going to go to Lima, and then we're going to go to Buenos Aires, Argentina in November. And then after that, I'm not too sure. It just depends on the world situation. There are a lot of crazy things going on. So I haven't planned too far ahead. And then who knows what's going to happen with COVID. So got to make sure, keep some open-ended plans there for sure.
It's funny that you mentioned that too, because, you know, my husband and I just went on a cruise. And in fact, my newsletter just went out today. And I've been looking at it for a couple of days, trying to decide whether or not to send it, because I didn't say don't travel, because we don't know how long this is going to go on. Mm-hmm. And travel, I mean, get out there and see the world, go places that you can go, be safe about it. But if you have a big event coming up, you might want to plan your travel at a different time, because we got back from our trip. My husband had COVID. I got it last year. No big deal. Both of us are fine. But we missed my husband's mother's 100th birthday.
Oh, wow.
Because he had COVID.
Yeah.
And we've been planning it, of course, for a year. She lives with his brother in North Carolina, and all the family came in, and my kids were going to be able to see their cousins that they, you know, some of them they've never met. And we missed it because my husband got COVID. So, you know, that's a piece of advice that I wanted to give my readers. And I hate to say anything negative about travel, because, you know, the travel industry is, you know, it can be hurting in certain places right now because of COVID. But
yeah,
if you've got a special event coming up that you don't want to miss, you might not want to travel right before it.
Because, well, it's, you know, smart. Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know where he got it. It could have been, you know, a kid that we passed in the airport that, you know, that would picked up something in a store right before he did. You know, it could have been anywhere, but yeah, you have to be careful. You just have to be careful. And we're celebrating, like I said, 30 years of marriage in October. And the top two places on my bucket list are Greece and Croatia. And Portugal. Yeah. Portugal's right up there too. I don't think it's going to happen this year because there's just too much going on in the world. But maybe spring for my birthday. So
yeah. All right.
That's what I'm hoping.
So you're going to Croatia then for sure?
Croatia or Greece.
Or Greece, okay.
Or Portugal. I don't know. You reminded me that I really want to go to Portugal too. But Greece has been up there, and so has Croatia for a long time. So I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the three.
Well, like Croatia has a special place in my heart because they have a huge like black truffle market. Like they, not like a physical market, but they have a lot of black truffles and people don't realize it. So I did this whole truffle hunting experience and in Zagreb in the capital up in the mountains, right around the city. And it was crazy to hold and find these black truffles. And like, I got to take them home and like cook with them and everything. I mean, like risotto and truffle eggs and truffle potatoes. And it was just wonderful to just try fresh truffles for yourself. It was a pretty cool thing. So
yeah,
and it wasn't that
too.
It wasn't that much money, you know, for at least in Croatia, it was like about $100 per person, and yeah, it was well worth it. by all means, because if you were to buy a black truffle, like a whole one, it would cost you like $200-$300. Goodness.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you're selling me on Portugal. So we'll see.
So
we'll see.
All right. Well, I think that is it for our conversation. And I really appreciate all of the information, all of your enthusiasm for food and travel. If people want to follow you and see all your adventures, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can follow me on Instagram at K.A. Stillwell. They can follow me on Twitter at Kelly Stillwell. And my site is actually, the URL is kellystillwell.com, or you could just Google food, fun, and faraway places, and there I'll be.
Having such an experienced traveler like Kelly just talk about all these different places, all these tours, all these cruises, everything just gets me super excited. And just like I mentioned, I never thought about a river cruise as an option to see a few countries and to taste a lot of food. And so, I mean, if you've listened to any of the other conversations I've had on the show, you know that, you know, cruises are pretty great. I don't care what anyone says. I love cruises when I've gone through Mexico or the Caribbean, and they're a good way to kind of relax. And then doing a river cruise just kind of opened my mind up just a little bit to what possibilities can lay there, you know, having a good time and just seeing those different countries in a different setting. I think that's kind of fun. And then, you know, we just talked about all these different places, and I'm really happy that Indonesia was the place that really kind of got the train rolling for her and started this whole travel adventure and writing about all of her adventures. So it's really fun. And you don't have to be a young person to go on all these adventures and to even start a travel blog or to share your experiences with the world. You know, she started this when she was 50, you know, when she started traveling like this. And that's great. I think her enthusiasm and her ability to overcome challenges that I think a lot of us kind of face when dealing with, should I travel? Should I not travel? What should be a priority? And she just shows that anyone at any time can go on these amazing trips and have these experiences that will leave memories that last a lifetime, that you shared with people that you love and close friends and family members. And that's what life is all about. I know we mentioned a lot of specific things that even we're going to put a lot of stuff into the show notes. So Kelly has a ton of great information and a lot of great links about the things we've talked about today. So go to nomadicfoodist.com/Kelly Stillwell. That's nomadicfoodist.com/KELLYSTILWELL. And that will have all the show notes. And also, if you're listening to this on a podcast player, there should be a link right in the in the notes section of the podcast player that will link you straight to the show notes. So you have all the information right there for you. So you can plan your own trip if you consider going any of these places that we have talked about. We just raved about the food at a lot of different destinations. So I know that if you're hungry for a new adventure, that Kelly has a resource for you in the show notes for sure. If you like today's episode, please hit the follow button on whatever listening platform that you are enjoying the show on. So that way you get a new episode every single week with new interviews and amazing guests from around the world. Thanks again for listening. And I really appreciate your time. And I hope that you've learned, and you've grown, and you've gotten more excited about your coming travels in the future. Just remember, eat with an adventurous heart, no matter where you go.